Well, gents, the Bible commands us, as men, as husbands, to honour wise women. The last word of this chapter, and the last words of the book say, honour her for all that her hands have done, and let her works bring her praise at the city gate. The city gate was kind of the town hall of the day, and generally the people that would be praised in the city gate would be men, military leaders, political figures, savvy businessmen. But the Bible commands that women should be praised there. The book of Proverbs is written to young men, and the Proverbs about marriage therefore focus on what to value in women. There is quite a lot in the early chapters, which we've already covered, about avoiding adultery. We will touch on that today, but we're not going to spend as much time on it. But what we see in the whole book as we go into these individual Proverbs and Proverbs 31 is a particular focus on what is to be treasured in a woman. It shows a single man what he should be looking for as he seeks to find a wife. And it shows a married man what to thank God for when he sees it in his wife. But what makes a good wife, a good woman? Our society can't define a woman, let alone praise it. One side of the aisle, to be a feminist means writing off any woman who prioritizes her family and marriage. As an overreaction on the other side, many descend into misogyny, evaluating women merely on appearances or seeing them as less than men. And that's why we need the Bible. We need the Bible to know what a good woman is. And that is what Proverbs teaches. For men, it's vital to learn the value of a wise woman and to reject foolish women. And for women in this culture of confusion, he needs a good model of feminine virtue to strive after. Verse 10 of chapter 31 says, a wife of noble character, who can find? She is worth far more than rubies. The godly woman is a treasure trove, greater than rubies. And we're going to look at these proverbs in two halves. We're going to see feminine qualities not to treasure and feminine qualities to treasure. Let's start with the negative then. What feminine qualities should a man not treasure? And there are three in particular that we see in the book of Proverbs. Don't treasure beauty, quarrelsomeness, or adultery. First, don't treasure beauty. Now, beauty, of course, isn't sinful. A number of godly women in the scriptures are described as beautiful, just for a few: Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, Abigail, and Esther. All godly women who are also beautiful. But most men overvalue beauty. Every secular psychological survey bears this out. Men value physical beauty highly in choosing women, more highly than women do in choosing men. Interestingly, women value the man's bank account more, and that's a slight difference between them, but there you go. However, outer beauty can hide inner ugliness. And Proverbs warns young men of being taken in by that. As we just said, Proverbs 31:30 ends by saying, charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Charm is the ability to allure a man, but that's deceptive. It doesn't show anything important about her and what she'll be like as a wife. Beauty also doesn't last. When you're choosing someone to live with for 50, 60 years, charm and beauty are really poor indicators of whether they're going to be the right partner for you for the rest of your life. Proverbs 11:22 is even more blunt. It's one of those proverbs that really sticks in your mind. Like a gold ring in a pig's snout is a beautiful woman who shows no discretion. Now, we can all picture a pig as ugly, but for a Jew, it was even more than that. A pig was unclean. So a beautiful woman who has no discretion is unclean. She's unfit to be brought into contact with God's people. So young men, move physical beauty down the list. Don't make beauty the deciding factor in choosing a wife. Discretion is much more valuable in the long term. And for a woman, particularly in our culture, which focuses so much on photographs online, there's immense pressure to be physically attractive. But the Bible says, that work on the heart is more important than work on the face. 1 Peter 3, verses 3 to 4. Your beauty should not come from outward adornment, such as elaborate hairstyles and the wearing of gold jewelry or fine clothes. Rather, it should be that of your inner self, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight. Don't compete for the shallow glances of ungodly men. God is attracted to the heart more than the body, and any man who's worth marrying will be the same. So don't treasure beauty. Next, don't treasure quarrelsomeness. You can tell something is important in Proverbs when it is repeated again and again and again. And five times we're told of the dangers of a quarrelsome wife. I'll just read them through. I won't make you turn to each one of them, but just listen to this repeated idea. A foolish child, this is Proverbs 19:13, sorry. A foolish child is a father's ruin, and a quarrelsome wife is like the constant dripping of a leaky roof. Proverbs 21, verse 9. Better to live on a corner of the roof than share a house with a quarrelsome wife. Proverbs 21, 19. Better to live in a desert than with a quarrelsome and nagging wife. Proverbs 25, 24. Better to live on a corner of the roof than share a house with a quarrelsome wife. It's been repeated again. And then Proverbs 27, verses 15 to 16. A quarrelsome wife is like the dripping of a leaky roof in a rainstorm. Restraining her is like restraining the wind or grasping oil with the hand. Now, we wince a little bit at these proverbs because they sound misogynistic. But let me just emphasize, that is not describing all women, but it is describing certain women. Not every woman is quarrelsome, but some are, and that is toxic in a marriage. If home life is just full of arguments day after day, yeah, life is as hard as being in the desert or sitting on the corner of a roof. Now, few men are going to treasure quarrelsomeness like they might treasure beauty, but the quantity of these proverbs shows how common it is that this is overlooked. I know of men who chose the most beautiful girl they could find, who they could convince to marry them, and they overlooked the fact that they were constantly in arguments with others. As soon as they were married, those arguments were within the home. And life was hard from that point onwards. Of course, that's a problem of both men and women. Men can be quarrelsome too. And the best time to deal with arguments in that way is before marriage. You're on your best behaviour before marriage. If you're quarrelling a lot before you're married, then don't take a wedding ring, because it's not going to make anything better. Few things are worse than a marriage that is defined by quarrelling. If you are married, I hope quarrelling doesn't characterise your marriage. The TV sitcoms may portray the idea that married people are constantly bickering and hating each other as if that's the norm. It isn't. Take a look at your relationship and ask yourself whether you're a husband or a wife, if you're quarrelsome. There's very little you can do to change the other person, but you can change yourself. What ongoing arguments are you consistently raising that are making your spouse's life a misery? So don't treasure beauty, don't treasure quarrelsomeness, and don't treasure adultery. It seems obvious, but again, men fall for it again and again. They leave their wife for an adulterous woman. We touched on adultery lots in the early chapters of Proverbs, but there are warnings throughout the rest of the book, so let me read them to you. Proverbs 22, verse 14. The mouth of an adulterous woman is a deep pit. A man who is under the Lord's wrath falls into it. Proverbs 23, verses 26 to 28. My son, give me your heart and let your eyes delight in my ways. For an adulterous woman is a deep pit, and a wayward wife is a narrow well. Like a bandit, she lies in wait and multiplies the unfaithful among men. And finally, Proverbs 30, verses 18 to 20. There are three things that are too amazing for me, four that I do not understand. The way of an eagle in the sky, the way of a snake on a rock, the way of a ship on the high seas, and the way of a man with a young woman. This is the way of an adulterous woman. She eats and wipes her mouth and says, I've done nothing wrong. There will always be other women in the world if you're a married man. Adulterous women do exist, and they're a temptation to the married man. Similarly, adulterous men exist, and they can tempt women. But adultery is never worth it. If you fall into the deep pit of adultery, the Lord's wrath is coming. In fact, even to fall into adultery is God's wrath upon you. He's letting you get the thing that you shouldn't be desiring. Male or female, husband or wife, married now or currently single, make a decision right now that you will never have sex outside of marriage with a husband if you're a wife, a woman, or a wife if you're a husband. No adultery, no homosexuality, no online stimulation, nothing except for one man and one woman in pleasurable intimacy. Everything else is a trap, a pit that will lead to wrath. An adulteress or any other form of sexual immorality may look enjoyable, better even than your wife, but it's never ever the case. So these are the qualities to treasure in a woman. Don't treasure her beauty, quarrelsomeness, or adultery. These are characteristics that ruin marriages and ruin lives. Now let's move on to feminine qualities to treasure. We're going to be largely based in Proverbs 31, so you might want to stick there, but we will dip into some Proverbs elsewhere as well. And there's really four key characteristics of a woman to value here. Proverbs 31 is quite remarkable. It's written in the style of a poem for a war hero. Although it's not always obvious in the English, there's quite a lot of military language here. I'll try and identify a few examples. You might think, why is that? Most young girls don't want to be a warrior. Well, young boys in that culture grew up idolizing war heroes. The surrounding world values men with physical strength. And so completely counterculturally, this poem is encouraging young men to treasure wise women like the culture values warriors. This comes throughout the book of Proverbs in different ways. So Proverbs 12 verse 4 values women in this way. It says, "A wife of noble character is her husband's crown, but a disgraceful wife is like decay in his bones." Proverbs 18:22, "He who finds a wife finds what is good and receives favor from the Lord." And Proverbs 19:14, "Houses and wealth are inherited from parents, but a prudent wife is from the Lord." Notice how not only is the wife described as a good blessing to the husband there, but it's a blessing from God. If he gives you a wife that he has been sanctifying and made wise, you should be incredibly grateful. So this passage is not demeaning to women. It's the very opposite. Around the same time, the Greek myths were being told in Greece, and the origin myth of women in Greek culture explained how women were given as a punishment to men, someone that they couldn't live with and they couldn't live without. And that was the common view of women in the ancient world in all sorts of different mythologies. But the Bible is very different. A wife isn't a curse from God, but a blessing from God. A wise woman is incredibly valuable. And that's what this poem and other proverbs in the book are trying to say. So if you're not going to treasure beauty or quarrelsomeness or adultery, what do you treasure in a woman? Well, four things. Treasure her help, her industry, her charity, and her fear. Firstly, treasure her help. When God created Eve, he called her a suitable helper for Adam. Now, many people see that as a demeaning description, but that is a big misunderstanding. Because who is the person most commonly called a helper in the Bible? It's God. You know, in the Psalms where it says, "God is my help in times of trouble," all the way through the scriptures, help, helper, is a description of God. And so, just as God is a help in times of trouble for a Christian, so in a lesser way, a wife is a help in life for a husband. And she's called a suitable helper because she fits him perfectly. He's good at certain things and she's good at other things. A wise woman fills up his faults so that together they are stronger than they were separately. What does that look like? Well, Proverbs 31 paints the picture. It gives a few examples of this woman helping her husband with things that he lacks. Verses 11 to 12 of chapter 31. "Her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. Everything that matters to him, he shares with her. They are teammates on this journey. She's looking to bring good things to him all the days of her life. She's not in a constant fight with him to see who can get the best. She's generous. She's helping. Proverbs 31, verse 23 is quite interesting. It says, her husband is respected at the city gate, where he takes his seat among the elders of the land. Seems a bit strange, given that the whole poem is about a wise woman. Why does it mention this? Well, the point is that her husband is a respected man. He's at the city gates where the elders sat because she enables him to be able to do that. Without her help, he wouldn't have the freedom to be able to do this. The Bible doesn't value the man at the city gates any higher than the wife who helped him to get there. Our culture is so obsessed with being in positions of power, it can't imagine that being a good thing. Why can't she be at the city gate, we might ask? There's not necessarily anything wrong with that, but the Bible values the behind the scenes just as much as the before the scenes. We struggle with that. But if we understand it, then we'll be able to take lower positions, seemingly, in the church, and we'll be able to recognize that backroom support is just as valuable in God's eyes as being at the front. If your wife sees helping you as worthy use of her life, then show immense gratitude to that if you're a husband. So treasure her help. Next, treasure her industry. She's clearly a productive woman. Now, before we dive into this description, we need to understand how the home worked in ancient Israel, because it's quite different to today. Work and home weren't separate entities like we think of them. Families ran businesses together, generally farms. And the man went out and generally did the physical labor, digging fields and planting things and doing all that kind of physical labor. But that didn't mean the women had no roles in the work of the household. There were various vital jobs to do, both for family life to succeed, but also for the farm to succeed. Now, think about how that relates to our work and home situations in a second. But that's what they did, okay? So there wasn't a you go off to work and then you come home. Your home was your work and your work was your home, and the two were combined. Verse 13 to 19. We see this. So she selects wool and flax and works with eager hands. So before the Industrial Revolution, when you get Quarry Bank Mill and all those kind of places, the man would shear the sheep, bring the wool home, bam, put it in a basket, then he'd go out and get some more wool, and the woman would be selecting it and working it into things that can be turned into clothing. She's vital for the work to continue. Verse 14, she's like merchant ships bringing her food from afar. She's responsible for the food. She's going to the market. She's getting the ingredients to make food. Verse 19, in her hand she holds the distaff and grasps the spindle with her fingers. Again, she's working this wool into clothing. Verse 24, she makes linen garments and sells them and supplies the merchants with sashes. So she's making clothes for the family. She's also going to the market and selling these things. It's all part of making the household work efficiently. Going back to verse 15, she gets up while it's still night. She provides food for her family and portions for her female servants. Now, this is another occasion where we need to be careful we understand the original world. Remember, this was a time without electric lights. So in Israel, there are between 9 and 14 hours of night, depending on the time of year. And when you realise that, you can see how she can be up before dawn, and also in verse 18, her lamp does not go out at night. She's not an insomniac functioning on 4 hours of sleep a night. You can get a healthy night's sleep and still do a little bit of stuff before you go to sleep and a little bit of stuff before you wake up. The point is that she's using her time wisely, not she's burning herself out in an unrealistic picture. Verse 16, she considers a field and buys it. Out of her earnings, she plants a vineyard. While her husband is tilling the soil, she's buying the field and investing that money in getting another field so that he's got more places to work. Similarly, in verse 18, she sees that her trading is profitable and her lamp does not go out at night. She's also no weakling, but in verse 17, she sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for the task. That's part of the warrior language that's obscured by the English. And verse 27 as well, it says, she watches over the affairs of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Literally, she's the lookout post of her home. She's like the guards on the city walls looking out. Proverbs 14 verse 1 says, the wise woman builds her house, but with her own hands the foolish woman tears hers down. Well, here's clearly a woman who is building up her home. Now, how does that transfer to our days? Because for most of us, work and home are very separate events. Even if you work from home, you are still working for an employer, most likely. You don't generally work as a family. I did used to know a Christian couple who dad, the husband of the family, was an electrician, and his wife was the one who took the calls and did all the kind of backroom accounting stuff. That's probably about as close to Proverbs 31 as you can get in our culture. They were working on the same thing, but different roles within it. It's very hard for us to see how that could happen in our society, except in a very few careers. And so it's hard to argue from this for a particular way of work-life balance, work-home balance, as some people would like to argue. I've heard some people try to argue that Proverbs 31 wife is a housewife. On one level, she is, but she's still doing a lot of what we would call work. I've heard others who've argued that she's a businesswoman because she's going out and buying fields, but that's kind of overstating the case because she's still working in the sphere of the home. The reality is that this woman lives in a completely different society to us. And so what I think is most important for us to see here is that this woman is industrious in the way that her family needs. If she was around today, I don't know whether she'd be a housewife, working part-time, working full-time. Perhaps at different points in her life, depending on where the family was at, she'd make different decisions. But the key is, whatever she was doing, she worked hard. She did what her family needed to succeed. Now remember, of course, that this isn't meant to be a stick to beat women with. It's meant to be something for men to see in women and treasure. So single men should be looking for women, or young women who are they can marry, who are hardworking, rather than those who have a pretty face, because they're going to value that for a lot longer. And married men should be praising their wives, like this poem does, for all the many blessings hard work brings to the home. Industry or hard work is a characteristic to praise. So treasure her help, treasure her industry, and thirdly, treasure her charity. A strong family isn't insular. It's a blessing to the society around. So look at verse 20. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. She's not so obsessed with her own family that she has no time to bless others. No, her wise management of her own home leaves her enough spare to bless the people around her. I look at our church and think of how many good works are done by the women in our congregation that's frequently unseen. Visiting the lonely, taking meals to the family with a new baby, caring for elderly parents, looking after widows and orphans. Of course, some men do these things too, but it's often the women in our congregation that lead the way in that. And again, Christian men, this is something to value in women. Does she care for the needy? What does she do with her free time? Is she serving the church? Does she have a particular eye to the crying infant or the lonely elderly person? Those are qualities you'll delight in for decades, much more than the colour of her eyes. And finally, treasure her fear. Verse 30, again, we've read it before, but look at the last half particularly. Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Proverbs told us twice in the first section of the book, both at the beginning of chapter 1 and the end of chapter 9, that the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. And that is true whether you're a man or a woman. Christian men, do not settle for an unbelieving wife. She will not serve you in the self-sacrificing, Christ-honoring way spoken of here. You need someone going in the same direction. Marriage is hard when one person fears God and the other person fears other things. It's like a cart being pulled in two directions. Make that the most important thing if you're not yet married, if you're going to decide who to marry. This God fear is contrasted with other fears. Because she fears God, she doesn't fear other things that a lot of women in her society do fear. So verses 21 to 22. When it snows, she has no fear for her household, for all of them are clothed in scarlet. She makes coverings for her bed. She's clothed in fine linen and purple. She's not fearful of the snow. She's already made the winter coats. Now, again, the point isn't go and start making your own clothes, ladies, when you go home. You can go and buy them from a shop, it's fine. The point is that she's prepared. Being God-fearing and industrious, she isn't fearing the winter snow. She's prepared for the circumstances that may come to her family as a good watchwoman on the tower. And that means more broadly in verse 25, she's clothed with strength and dignity. She can laugh at the days to come. There's much to be fearful of in this life, but this woman isn't a nervous wreck. She's prepared for the trials that may come for her family. She's able to laugh at the things keeping other women up at night. And all of this is because she's got that stable foundation. She fears the Lord, not the snowfall or any other problem. By the way, this God-fearing makes her an incarnation of Lady Wisdom in her house. You might remember in the early parts of the book, there was Lady Folly, who represented being a fool, and Lady Wisdom, who represented going after what God said in his word. Well, she almost is an incarnation of that. Verse 26, she speaks wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue. Wisdom is what the kind of stuff we get in the book of Proverbs. And faithful instruction, I'm told, is kind of covenant instruction, the kind of thing you'd have got in God's word. The point being, she's a godly woman giving God's word to her children and her husband. Let me tell you that that's a blessing far more valuable than charm and beauty. So treasure her help, her industry, her charity, and her fear. The sum of all this is that a good wife is praiseworthy. Verse 28 to 29. Her children arise and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. Many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. We live in a world that praises the wrong women. It might praise the angry, the promiscuous, the lazy, the godless, or it ignores women altogether. It is vital that men in the church treasure these things and praise them in their wives and in the single women in the congregation too. Now, I know many women have a love-hate relationship, or more a hate-hate relationship, with Proverbs 31, because it seems like an impossible standard. But the truth is that the majority of women in our church are exactly what is being described here. They do help their husband if they're married. They're industrious if they're married or not. They're charitable if they're married or not. They fear God, not other things that are happening in the world. They aren't perfect. But in comparison to the women of the world around, they are wives of noble character, far more worthy than rubies. They are few and far between in the world, and it is not godly to take that for granted. Godly women should be honoured for all their hands have done. The Bible tells us so. So in conclusion, the message of Proverbs is very positive. In a world that doesn't value women, it commanded young men to treasure wise and godly characteristics in their women. The main application for men then is to have their eyes open to feminine virtues, perhaps virtues that they may have underappreciated. And as a side benefit, women here have a model to pursue as well. But as we close, we might feel a little bit of guilt setting in. Perhaps men might look at their treatment of women and be ashamed. They poured their energy into the airbrushed women on computers rather than on inner beauty. They've taken their wives for granted, perhaps. They berated their wives rather than rejoiced in the gift God has given. Perhaps they've even begun to lust in their hearts after a relationship elsewhere. And perhaps women might equally feel overwhelmed as they look at this description. Perhaps you've been quarrelsome even today and you're convicted of it. Perhaps you've been challenged by this picture of industry and charity and think how far you fall short of it. Perhaps you are too fearful of circumstances and have too little fear of God. On one level, Proverbs is giving us a call to change. It doesn't want us to carry on in folly. It wants us sometimes to be wounded by God's word so that we'll change. But we still have the problem of this guilt in our past. Which is why it's good that we regularly come to the Lord's table and be reminded that our sin has been paid for. The Bible describes the church not as the wise woman, but as the adulteress. We're all like a sinful woman who has cheated on her husband. And yet our husband opens his arms and welcomes us back. He has washed us from our sin by his blood. And remarkably, though we are not a wife of noble character to him, he values the church more highly than any husband has ever valued his bride. So our husband Jesus invites us to the table and says, all is forgiven. When we drink and we eat his forgiveness, we are equipped to go to the tables around our own homes and do the same. As husbands, to be just as forgiven and just as smitten with our wives as the Lord is with us. And as wives, to be the kind of women the church should have been to her Lord. So we should go home and try to be changed, try to be like this. But before that, let's remember that the sin in our marriages, our singleness, or anything else is washed away beneath the cross of Jesus.